Dear Shooter, so you broke the weekend liberty brief and added to the population. Now you have littles and guns. Fear not, Shooter. With some knowledge and discipline, shooting just became a family activity.
But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, no. I got an F in shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents. Here's 20 cents. Here's 20 cents. Wow, you just made that
clip
weird.
On. It's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that? That isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe, nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Deer Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
Oh, happy Thursday, or I don't even know what day it is at this point. Things have been nuts like the last week and a half.
Well, you've been busy.
Oh, my God. We did a three-day long range, and then it was pack up and go camping for the weekend, which was awesome because I got to spend it with my granddaughter, and I think I may have turned her into a motorhead.
Uncle Cody's her favorite.
Oh, yeah, he is now. They got this little 110 Honda motorcycle, and she fell in love with that thing.
Oh, so, throttle jockey.
There is the Ranger. So if Cody were to pull up with a motorcycle or Grandpa had the Ranger, she'd pick Cody every time.
Well, the motorcycle's always way more fun.
Well, I think it's because she could lean forward, hold on to the handlebar. She felt like she was driving more. Even though I tried to let her drive the Ranger, but she kept trying to put us into trees. She is only 2.5.
You drive where you look.
Right? And she was looking everywhere. That kid.
She kind of looked intoxicated while driving.
Is that Grandma's issue?
No, I don't drive that shit.
No, there was something about made mention about vodka in a sippy cup.
No, that wasn't me. That was his sister.
No, baby, that's mommy's cup.
Yeah, right. No, I was kind of worried about her because we kind of did some things that were kind of sort of dumb. Busting through 4-foot snow drifts down a hill and then through the bog that was 3 feet deep, and then I got high center trying to get out of the stupid thing, had to get winched out, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to scare her. She's not going to want to do this. She was giggling the whole time.
She's just like me when we were going down that muddy hill.
Oh God.
I giggled the whole way. Your butt was puckered. I giggled.
I needed to reupholster that seat. It was bad.
But it was good. Good holiday weekend, and we hope you all had a wonderful Memorial Day weekend and had that nice moment of silence on Monday for our fallen.
I just hope it was safe. Everybody survived it.
Yeah, well.
I think I did.
Is the jury still out?
It was.
It could be.
it was, you know, by the hair of her chinny chin chin, but we survived.
All right.
So, kids and guns. My thought on it, this is a great combination.
At what age do you start? And do you start with, like, a BB gun? Or do you go ahead and just hand them the freaking world?
No. And there's a couple companies out there, Savage, Ruger, Rock Island. They all have youth model. Typically, they're rimfire, 22. And I think these are great guns to get a kid started. But before you do that, you've got to build the respect, and you have to make them understand what these weapons are capable of, because they are truly weapons.
Don't make them mysterious, neat things. They are tools, and you show them to them as tools safely. You build the respect of what they are safely. Without scaring the kids, right? But they've got to understand the difference between the Nerf gun,
mm-hmm.
and the regular gun.
Yep. Well,
I think my brother introduced my niece to guns, and then he took her rabbit shooting. So death is real.
No,
you don't push an A button and come back, y'all.
And it's a good way to get them started. I started shooting varmints and rabbits and that kind of thing first. But long before I got to see a gun go bang, they would get in the gun cabinet and they'd show me what they are. And we'd talk about it. And some hard and fast rules were laid down. And if you violated those rules, your butt got beat.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you went and messed with a gun cabinet when an adult wasn't there, that was, you don't sit for a week kind of a situation. And you knew better. They told you about the gun cabinet. So there was no mistaking what that is, right? So there's some respect built from some of the bit of the fear of the God, but from a very young age, you know what they are. You're talked to about them. And then when you get to go, it's a big deal because now you get to be part of the adult crowd.
Right.
And that rite of passage is something that kids, I mean, they vibrate themselves nearly apart just being part of that.
But what age is rite of passage? I mean, I wouldn't start my 2-year-old niece. Or... I think
it depends on the kid a lot of times. I've known some very mature 4- and 5-year-olds that could handle it. And I've seen kids at 9, 10. I don't know that I would put them in that situation just yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think it depends on the kid, to be honest with you.
I think it depends on the kid, and I think it depends on the culture of the family. And I know that you grew up probably pretty similar to the way I did. You know, guns were a part of life from the time I was born. I mean, my grandfather was a hunting guide. So hunting and guns and that culture, that influence was a part of my life from day one.
But they weren't made out to be special mystical things.
No, they were a tool.
It was a tool, right? And it wasn't anything you showed off. It wasn't anything that you made a big deal about. They were just a tool, just like a hammer and a wrench in the toolbox.
Yep.
They were, in my youth, there was one hanging in the back window of every truck that we owned.
Mm-hmm.
There was one in the glove box of every truck we owned.
Yep.
It was just there. More times than not, it was in the way.
Yeah, it was.
I had no idea that these things were such a politically polarizing thing until I moved away at 17.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized the whole world was fucking nuts.
It is.
And about this one thing.
And I think that's the biggest issue. I talk to a lot of parents that come to me and, well, you know, we want you to teach our child gun safety and this and that. And fine, I'm all for it. But the first thing I tell the parents is, look, you've got to demystify these things. They're not the unicorn. And exactly like you're saying, it's like you have to explain to them this is a frying pan, but there's procedures and there's rules to the use. That's
because right. If they don't understand what they are the unicorn. And what do you get into when your parents aren't around?
Exactly.
The Ooh. Unicorn.
Oh, the dangerous thing, the taboo.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Parents today make it taboo.
But it's interesting that you have folks coming to you saying, we want you to teach our children firearm safety. And while I can appreciate that, they need to be in that class more than the children do, because they're the ones that are going to have to enforce this new rule in the house.
Yep, and that's...
They should have known the rules. If you own firearms, you know the rules.
If you're asking
right?
an outsider to teach your kids firearm safety, I'm not convinced you know the rules.
And that's one of my rules, is if I have anybody that's under 18 in any of my classes, a parent has to be present. And part of it is for the parent, because they're coming to me because they don't know how to approach it.
Right.
Come on, y'all. It's not sex. It's a gun. I'm just like.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I got lost in a moment there. Well, I see your point. It's just enough taboo in a lot of people's family culture where that becomes that unicorn, that thing that. I'm going to show my friends this thing. I know where it's at. I'm not supposed to know, but, right? Trying to hide it from the kids is the worst mistake you can make.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, is there has to be consequences for breaking the unsupervised rules. And those consequences cannot be minor. They have to be something that leaves a mark.
Yep. Yep. Because bad things happen.
They can. The potential's there. It's a tool, but it's a dangerous tool.
Now, I know you guys aren't much for keeping them locked up, because if something goes bang in the night, you don't want to be messing with the combo or whatever. But they have that biometric safe out now. It's a fingerprint.
Yeah. No, I'm a big fan of those.
The stop box. All that kind of stuff's really good ideas.
And I'm an advocate, and you know, especially if you have very, very young children that like can't reach the top shelf of the closet, keeping a quick access safe up there with a firearm, because when things go bump in the night, where's the first place you're going to go? You're going to go for your kids. And being able to have that defensive tool there, that's where you barricade. I catch a lot of heat for that.
It's a little unorthodox.
It is,
but it makes sense.
But properly stored and locked up.
And out of reach.
Out of reach in some kind of a biometric or quick access safe, I think makes sense. Because I'm a huge deterrent of I'm not going to go search my house with a gun, because I'm going to be in that heightened state and I'm going to come around the corner and see a shadow and shoot my own child.
It
does happen. So having that firearm staged where you're going anyway, it just makes sense.
I agree.
But you have to stage it in such a way that it's safe.
Well, this is true. Again, don't hide it from the kids.
Right. I think that's the worst thing you can do.
If Christmas teaches us anything, kids are going to find it.
Right? They'll find that top shelf of the closet. Yeah.
And they'll get chairs into it. And if they think they're not supposed to, that is just fuel to that fire. Because now it's exciting and dangerous and
right.
I'm going to get away with it.
And the problem is, especially today, the only exposure that kids get to firearms is movies and TV.
Movies, and TV, video games are really
video
bad
games
that
are
way.
Huge. But they don't, those things don't teach us about proper firearms handling, and because it's all Hollywoodized.
No, it glorifies the improper use of it all. I mean, video games. If we look at how just the United States military overall has trained its soldiers to engage an enemy combatant over the years. They start with, just take a just an example, Civil War, mm-hmm. right? The catch of the act of harming somebody was still very, very wrong.
Yep.
And I know that, and they all knew that what they were there to do. But they also knew if they stood there in that line, brought that musket up, and did not fire it when commanded to, that was considered treason, and they could be shot on sight.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at old battlefields and look at the muskets they picked up, sometimes they had 10, 12 rounds in succession loaded into the barrel, because they'd bring them down, they'd load them on command, they'd bring them up, let everybody else fire, and they went through the motions, but that catch of killing somebody was bad.
Yep.
Let's fast forward to, say, Vietnam.
Right.
And we're dealing with much different firearms.
Mm-hmm.
We're dealing with a much different enemy combatant. And we used a tombstone target.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It was a little piece of paper that would pop up, and you had to engage that target at a very series of distances. And it was a shape that they engaged, not a person.
Right.
Fast forward to today.
Well, look at let me rewind for a second. If you look at, you know, you talked about Civil War, you talked about Vietnam. If you, and especially Vietnam, like they kept track, and it was something like 26,000 rounds per kill,
right,
in Vietnam, because our soldiers were very, very hesitant to actually aim at that shape.
That's right. Under stress, it was a whole different thing, and we'd never really fought a guerrilla warfare where they fought back that way,
mm-mm.
right? And so the stress factor is a whole different discussion. But we used a tombstone target. It was still just kind of a shape. Head and shoulders is all they really got.
Yep.
Fast forward to today, they're in 360-degree full-on simulators.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not just people very clearly defined in the graphics. It's an ethnicity.
Yep.
And they're grooming you for a profile of this ethnicity is bad. You don't shoot the white guy standing at the payphone. You shoot the raghead getting out of the truck.
Yep.
And it's more than just firearms training, but it disengages the mindset of killing's bad and encourages the killing. This type of person is good.
Well, and what it does is it, and this is something that we see in societies, and we see it in our society too, especially from a political standpoint. You want to other the people that are opposed to your ideals. Because when you do that, you dehumanize them.
That's right.
And that's the whole point of what you're talking about.
Which makes the heinous act okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And with a video game exposure at a very young age, these kids are seeing the most aggressive natured use of a firearm graphically in 4K. I mean, it's incredible that what they are seeing now.
Yep.
And since the 80s, action movies have glorified the use of a firearm. The good guys used them. The bad guys used them. The bad guys always got shot. The good guys never reloaded. But we've made it pop culture,
mm-hmm.
the use of a firearm.
We have.
And on the backside of it, we demonize the use and ownership of it, which confuses a lot of young folks.
It does. You're absolutely right. And that's something that I'm hoping, especially here moving forward the next, you know, 4 to hopefully like 12 years, you know, we start to move back to a Second Amendment culture. And we start to teach our children what, you know, what the real use of firearms is. You know, and for the most part, for most people, that's going to be hunting, competition, sports shooting. And it's good. And one of the programs I really applaud is 4-H. Their youth shooting program is incredible.
It's top notch. It's what Appleseed wanted to be.
Yes.
No, they've done a really good job with it.
And I wouldn't disparage Appleseed. I think they do a really good job. And they also, and one of the things that I think they do above and beyond 4-H is teach the history of why we have that Second Amendment.
Yeah, I think that's really a good point. And Second Amendment is a pillar of foundation for our liberty and freedom in this country that we call the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
It's that one thing that is the roadblock for all other measures of control that government wants to do.
Right.
But the youth needs to get a good civics lesson.
They do.
The congressional entire group needs a civics lesson.
Agreed.
But we got to start with the kids so they can go, no, that's not right.
Well, and that entails getting a stranglehold on the education system. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was in school, I mean, we had shooting in the basement. I mean, we were shooting air guns.
It was part of PE.
Yeah, right. And we spent like a month on it. They taught hunter safety in school.
Yeah, mine too.
which kind of led to the fact that I've been through hunter safety like 5 freaking times. We won't go into that, but
that's just because you couldn't get it the first time.
And I remember the shooting sports portion of the phys ed. It was a couple months worth of curriculum.
It was.
And I remember very vividly that if you improperly handled the firearm or created a dangerous situation on the line,
you sat your ass down.
You were ostracized.
Yep.
And it wasn't just the teachers. It was your peers.
Yes.
And because everybody was grilled into firearm safety.
Right.
We've lost that as a society.
So, your daughter, and I know you taught her to shoot at a relatively young age, at least taught her about firearms.
Yep. Kai was 4 when we first started having conversations.
Right. So, what was the very first thing you taught her?
To identify the firearm and, if she sees one that's not where it should be, to come get me.
Right.
That was the first thing I taught her. Identification, that's not where it's supposed to be. I need to get an adult. That was the first thing I taught her.
Mm-hmm.
Because she sees it. Somebody I loaned one to and went hunting or something, left it on the counter or the bar, or leaned up against the couch or whatever. She would come grab me and make sure that got put away safely.
Right.
And she would walk me through, because I grilled her on it, how to unload and make and show clear. And yep. She would make you visually check it and then physically check it and then open the action so it can't go off. I mean, she was a Nazi about it. But when it came time for her to go out, some of this was second nature.
Right.
And I didn't have to stand over her and berate her with the firearms safety rules. She had a couple brain farts at the range, and I got on her pretty good. Often it ended the range session because I got on her probably harder than I should have. But she remembers that today.
Right.
And so when she comes home and she wants to go, I watch her go through the ritual of careful handling, the proper asking to go. She doesn't have but the one firearm that's hers.
Mm-hmm.
And we go and we take it every time we go.
What is that firearm?
It is a Cricket 22. She loves that.
Oh, my goodness. She's what now? Is she 20, 21?
I've tried to give her other guns.
She can go beyond a Cricket.
She loves that gun. Mostly because when we would go to the range when she was little, if she showed perfect firearms handling safely and knocked the X-ring out of the target, we would go for ice cream. It was a tradition, something me and her only did. And it became her favorite firearm because she learned how to shoot open sights. And at 100 yards, that girl is pretty darn deadly with a rimfire.
Well, I mean, that's kind of you, too, with your martini cadet. I mean, you're scary with open sights.
Yeah. It's all right.
It's all right. So this is a gal that she had been exposed to firearms. But when she came to work with me, she got thrown into the deep end of the pool. Because at work, there are firearms nearly everywhere. Every shape, size, configuration, because we do a lot of optics testing.
Well, one of the things that I have huge respect for you is that everybody in your company is a shooter.
That's right.
And as they should be, because then they understand what they're doing.
Well, and anybody at the company can answer the phone.
Right.
And talk to somebody that may or may not have a problem. And they recognize real fast when they're not going to have the answer, and they can elevate that to me.
Right.
It happens a lot.
Like when it gets all mathy?
Yeah, that's fine. I have no problems talking to my customers. Sometimes they make me crazy because they just have something in their head from either from Call of Duty or some other misappropriation of dissemination of information. And they have a really weird idea how the world works. So we have to have the conversation. You know, in the beginning, there were dinosaurs, and we start over. Sometimes they appreciate it. Sometimes they don't.
I've heard some of your customer service calls, and I'm sitting there scratching my head going, how does this person tie their shoes in the morning?
There is a lot of that. But they're customers, and you take care of them anyway.
That's right. Well, let's take care of our customers, and we'll be right back.
Beans, bullets, Band-Aids, and booze. While everyone forgets about the last one, 10th Mountain has you covered. With a range of whiskey, vodka, and cordials, you're sure to find just the right spirit for your next adventure. Just remember to flip up your nods before you take a sip. Now shipping orders to nearly every US state so you can get in on the awesomeness. Enter Dear Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. Whiskey worth fighting for.
When it comes to your personal security, you want the best, and your training shouldn't be an exception. WyoTac is your one stop for all of your education and training needs, covering competitive, defensive, and hunting classes, as well as medical, fieldcraft, and survival courses. With over a decade of experience and with a network of resources, WyoTac can help to meet your goals. When no one is coming, you have to rely on yourself. Make sure you know what to do when the time comes. WyoTac. Empowerment through self-reliance.
I think that was at the end of the day, that was my favorite part about this weekend. I mean, we had a long holiday weekend. Brandy went up, on the mountain, camped out with family, friends. There was a lot of young kids. We had, what, 5 up there?
Yeah.
You know, including our granddaughter, who I think she's decided she's a mountain girl. But to see these kids, I mean, we had, you know, we went on ranger rides and razor rides, and we had 22s up there that the kids got to play with, and the crickets, in fact. You know, fishing and just the whole outdoor experience. I think a lot of kids kind of miss out on that.
Family.
Yes.
Disconnected from the net.
Kind of.
Well, fair enough.
I mean, they had Starlink.
Did anybody talk to your kids about the meaning of why we're having the 3-day weekend?
Yes, actually.
Because it's not just barbecues and fun times.
Actually, we did have that conversation.
Good. A lot of folks missed that piece.
Because, well,
it was very cliff note because I think the oldest child there was 5. But, you know, it was discussed.
Yes, it was. And I was fortunate enough to be able to have that conversation because I hadn't unloaded my truck from, like, the last training that I did. So I still had, you know, I had my night vision and my helmet, and I had all the cool, the really cool stuff that, especially the boys that were there, which, what, there were 3 boys and 2 girls?
Yes.
And they were, like, fascinated. They're like, oh, this Call of Duty, this is real. Yes, yes, it is. And this is why we have this weekend, because we're honoring those that gave their lives so that we could have the life that we have.
Good.
And I think, especially the 2 oldest boys, I think they kind of took that to heart a little bit.
So every year, make that a part of the tradition, because we can't forget why we're doing it.
No.
We can get more in depth as they get a little older, but, you know, kindergarten, that's rough.
Every year, though. Every year. They need to hear the story or two.
They do. And I think, you know, after you have breakfast on Monday morning, I think everybody needs to just take a moment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if we instill that in our kids and our grandkids, because that's where we're at, I think we create a better generation.
We do. I took a moment on Monday and went up to the cemetery and walked a few rows. Just taking some me time away from everything. I was taken back by the age of some of the graves that had military service marked on the headstones.
Mm-hmm.
There's everything in this cemetery here from pre-Civil War to, I mean, we're talking territory type stuff, to modern day. And you get into a certain portion of the cemetery, and it's disturbing how many younger men and women are in that place.
Well, it's disturbing because they're newer and they're an unknown soldier. How does that happen these days?
Well,
back in the day, I get that.
It's the volume that bugged me. You'd see, you know, 2 or 3 here or there up through Vietnam, right? World War II pronounced, Vietnam a couple pronounced. But the volume of our younger generation, younger than me, that are planted in the Marble Orchard.
You're not a younger generation?
I'm 50. I'm not crazy old. I'm kind of right in the middle.
51.
Fine.
Yeah, but make no mistake. We have always sent our younger men.
We have.
And,
the volume in the cemetery is what disturbed me.
What disturbs me is that's the unknown soldiers. Those are the ones that no one claimed. And for some reason, these days, they don't have a name for these people?
Oh, no. I was not in the Oddfellow Cemetery.
Okay.
I was in the actual cemetery.
Okay, I thought you were in our Soldier of Unknown, and I'm like, that's really weird these days.
Yeah, no, I didn't go up there and do that one. I went to the actual cemetery. It was just disturbing, the volume of our young folks that have given their all for our way of life. That needs to be brought to the attention of the younger folks so they have an appreciation for what they enjoy. Because you got to go and run and do in free America.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks don't get to do that.
No, they don't. And I do think that you're exactly right. Our younger generation needs to learn an appreciation for what it costs for us to have the life that we have.
And it comes back full circle to a physics lesson and a civics lesson and their firearms.
Yes. Now, explain the physics to me.
Okay, so I'm going to really
push the A button and come back.
That's correct. Yeah. We haven't figured out respawn.
Yeah, no, and you squeeze the trigger. This engages the sear, compresses the spring, the fire pin goes forward. Physics lesson. The piece of lead goes down that long pipe, exits at a high rate of speed. Don't point at anything you don't want to destroy.
Right.
Things have consequences.
And that's why I was really, I really applauded your brother for taking our niece out, and they hunted rabbits, right? And she's 14, 15 at this point. But now she understands the consequences of that bullet exiting the muzzle.
Yes.
She knows, like, you don't come back from that.
No. No. And back to that youth education, it's really important that you share the entire gamut of it all. And Memorial Day is an excellent way to show some of the consequences of not understanding civics.
It absolutely is. And I would, you know, I'll bet that most of our listeners have watched The Patriot, Mel Gibson's portrayal of the Revolutionary War. And in the very beginning of that, the two younger kids were like 7 and 9 or something like that. I mean, they were young. They're out with muskets hunting for dinner.
That's right.
Like, that was a way of life. Mm-hmm. And I think to a certain extent for all three of us, that was a way of life growing up.
That's correct.
When did that end? I mean, what were we talking? 80s?
60s. I think the 60s, the populace started to embrace more of a urban lifestyle.
That I could go with that, yeah.
Yeah. And then it just, if you don't have to go and do it, you can pay the middleman, life's easier.
It's not super hard. So what is the youngest age you will accept in your class?
You know, honestly, the youngest that I have had in my class was 7.
Okay, and then there's hunter safety, and I know they can't hunt till they're what, 12, but they can take it a year or two earlier.
That's correct.
And then there's the 4-H programs, and some schools, not a lot, but some schools have programs. So the education's out there. It's not hard to find. It's, are you willing to look in your community?
That's right.
And maybe a little past if you don't have it local.
Yeah, and 9 to 14 is that impressionable age for this type of thing.
Yeah, and especially for, you know, if I have parents coming to me and we want you to teach our kids. Okay, I'm going to discount that class, number one.
Good.
And we're going to start out with function. We're going to start out with safety, safe handling, you know, and kind of pull in a lot of the NRA, the Eddie Eagle type program where, you know, if you see it, go get a parent.
Like, that's right.
Go get an adult. Because safety is the biggest thing. Like, and you're absolutely right. These are a tool, but there's proper procedure.
Absolutely.
Demystify it.
Yep.
Don't make it, you know, remove the taboo part of it.
That's correct.
Because I think that's where kids get into trouble. They're curious because they don't know. When they know, there's no longer the mystery. There's no longer the curiosity. It's, oh.
And little boys like to show off to their friends. There's a inherent nature of a little boy that wants to do that.
Yeah, we found out that's why there's a governor on a four-wheeler.
Yes. Yes. But it's that... I'm going to show something off that maybe he doesn't get to see at his house because I know where one is in my house.
Right.
And that's dangerous. If they don't have the foundation in it, it's very dangerous. And I can see all of the knee-jerk reactions for locked up, separate ammo, storage. I see it. It's an improper reaction to a poor teaching.
Which goes back to something that we fight so much. Especially here, How many times do we see products developed to try and fix a training issue? I bet 50 times a year.
A lot.
You know, it's some of the things that we see at SHOT Show, at NRA, at GOA, at what NSAGW, at EWA even. I mean, it's like so many products that are developed to fix a training issue.
And if they're well built and well explained, they'll sell.
They do sell. And the problem is they sell because of ignorance.
Correct.
Which is what I hope we maybe help solve here on this program.
Well, we touch on it a lot. Sometimes we're pointing and laughing, but for the most part, we're serious about it. You can be educated and be humble, or you can be that arrogant guy and do it wrong until something bad happens.
Well, it was a quote that I heard when I very first became an instructor, and it's a quote that I will take to my grave. It was Tony Blauer, and it was, be careful what you practice, because you may get really good at the wrong thing. And that's a thing.
That is totally a thing.
You know, we actually have a Venn diagram, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, it's how many reps it takes to break a bad habit.
How many does it take?
Oh, like something like 10,000. It's crazy.
That's a pretty well-trained bad habit.
Exactly. Because, so, depending on the complexity of what you're trying to learn, okay, it's 5 to 9,000 reps to master that. Well, first you have to break the bad habit before you can start mastering the right one.
Now
you've doubled that.
A step further into training. Back when I started, the Weaver and the push-pull doctrine was taught. I mean, it was taught as, this is how you do it.
Right.
And along comes competition and striker-fired pistols and low recoiling. And everything changes.
And dash cams, when we find out what people really do under stress.
Right. And now the training's changed. If you blade off in a fighting stance and run a push-pull Weaver stance, you're wrong.
Not to necessarily wrong, but it's not.
You can't move proper.
No, but the thing about it is that here's the Weaver stance. Number one, and I think people, this fact is lost. Like, Jack Weaver, when he developed the Weaver stance, he developed it because he had a bad shoulder. So he was compensating for a ambulatory issue.
And he was the guy. Everybody adopted it.
He was the guy.
I use the Weaver when I shoot a full auto.
Sure.
Yeah, you've got to have that brace behind you. And I'll shoot a Weaver if I have to make a very, very precise shot at distance. It has its place, but
I got in trouble at a recent class, advanced pistol handling, because bad habits, they crept back in about halfway through the day, and my bald-headed instructor decided that I was doing it wrong and had to readjust everything. And to his credit, my hit ratio and what I was doing improved once I got his stance implemented. But I was trained that way.
Right.
And now I'm having to retrain the new way.
Well, that's why, you know, every few years, pick a class.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take a class. Something might have changed. It's just like CPR. They change that stuff every 2 years.
And training's an evolution.
Some
things show up that are better. They may not solve all your situations, but overall, they're better. So do it that way. Learn to do it a different way.
One of the very first things that I talk about in all of my classes is it's never, never, and it's never always.
That's a good line.
Everything is contextual. There are times, you know, one of the things that I teach in my carbine classes, I teach to run the charging handle rather than the bolt release. Now, I give the caveat that, look, if you're in a competition setting and, you know, quarter seconds matter, hit that freaking bolt release because it is faster. Mm-hmm. But from a consistency standpoint, running the charging handle, I believe, is better.
It does the same thing, pistol or carbine.
Right.
It's relatively the same motion. And I took classes with Clint Smith.
I know. Don't get between God and...
Eugene Stoner got together with God and put your thumb right where it's supposed to be. And you can hear him barking these out because the way he taught you to shoot, he was right. Your hands were where they were supposed to be.
No, he was.
You didn't take them off. You didn't lower the weapon to charge it. I mean...
You fought with me on that for years.
I did. I still kind of fight with you on it a little bit.
But you understand my reasoning.
I do. I completely get it. If you're looking to go down the rabbit hole and learn other things, the firearms craft dictates you've got to do things consistently. And you got to do them reactionary under muscle memory without fail.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And just because I have one way to push a button on a specific firearm, that button's not available on an AK.
Right.
It's not available on a shotgun. I have to handle those completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So a guy that has firearms craft is way more valuable than a guy that knows one system really well.
Well, and you mentioned Clint Smith, and he is always an advocate of, you know, don't just be a master of one firearm, be a master of firearms. Because you never know what you may have to pick up.
And the only way you get that experience is in training.
Right. And you get to pressure test.
Absolutely.
In a
safe environment for the most part.
Yeah, for the most part. And that was actually, I was on another podcast a few weeks ago. And one of the other guys on the podcast was like, oh, you know, I don't want you to bring this to class. And I'm like, no. Let me stop you right there. Bring it, because that's where you get to pressure test it and learn whether it works or not.
Or if you understand it.
Right.
Right? I mean, I took an AK to a carbine class once, and I was that weird Harold Dean that reached over to run the action. It works.
it does work.
For the platform I was running.
It absolutely works. Now we're going to peg you as a Russian.
Yeah. But you can't do that with an AR.
No.
It doesn't work. Yeah, I mean, the banana clips, they go in the firearm completely differently.
Yep.
There's no tap rack there.
Nope, because they roll in.
They roll in. That's right. So everything, those little nuances, they change depending on what you do.
And that's, with an AR and a pistol, like we were talking, it's a consistent movement. But with an AK, now it's totally different.
There's nothing consistent about running an AK.
And there's no, like... There's no bolt release for an AK. You've got to run the handle.
You've got to run it. Yep.
I've had guys in classes trying to teach them that technique, and they're used to an AR, or maybe a Mini 14 or something of that nature, and it's like it doesn't work the same way, guys.
The pop quiz, a little bit of trivia. When you run an AK, are you a reach over or a reach under guy?
Reach under.
Okay, fair enough.
Because I don't want to go over top of the gun, because now I would have a tendency to bring it down off target.
Right. I'm a reach under guy as well.
Reach over is not necessarily wrong.
And we are talking about firearms, guys.
Gosh, I hope so, because this is getting a little weird.
Yeah, the second he says reach around, we're off. That's it.
No, I don't reach around. Reach under. Holy cow! And look at that, we're down to it.
Awesome.
So we're going to end it on a reach under.
Reach under. And like 3% of the firearms populace is going to understand what we're talking about, because that's the frequency of AK guys.
That's all right.
3%.
10th Mountain makes vodka for them.
That's right.
Remember, AK, not your wife.
Wow. And she leaves the visitors with a visual.
And on that note, just keep blaming the reach around.